Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome again. We're back with Bringing Voices to Power. And on today's show, in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I'm talking with Morgan Fox, Communications Manager of the Washington, D.C.-based Marijuana Policy Project. Marijuana prohibition has failed. It's time for a new approach. And MPP is leading the way. Since their founding in 1995, they've been making real progress in reforming U.S. marijuana laws by lobbying for legislation, and running ballot initiative campaigns to allow seriously ill patients to use medical marijuana with their doctor's recommendations. They're also lobbying for legislation and sponsoring ballot initiatives to replace marijuana prohibition with a sensible system of regulation, garnering widespread media coverage of the need to change media policies, lobbying Congress to reduce the White House drug czar's budget for his deceptive ad campaigns, building coalitions of supportive individuals and organizations to advocate on behalf of marijuana policy reform. And they're doing a whole lot more than that. Okay, Mr. Fox, you're on?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
How you going, sir? How you doing, sir? I'm glad to have you. And you just want to tell us a little bit more, if I didn't cover it all about the marijuana policy project, anything I leave out about that?
Well, you pretty much covered it, but, you know, like you said, we're primarily a lobbying organization. We also engage in a lot of public education surrounding both marijuana laws and the comparative safety of marijuana compared to alcohol and other drugs, just so that people can be informed when they go to the ballot box.
Okay, that's great. Now, I want to get to this, jumping down to the end of the description that I just gave about these deceptive ad campaigns. We all remember the Reefer Madness. You know, I know they can't be that crazy now to come out with something like that. But tell us some of these about some of these ads that are deceptive, that they're using taxpayer money to actually fool the taxpayer about marijuana.
Well, we actually haven't had too much of a problem with those ads. The White House's Office of National Drug Control Policy budget for putting them out has been significantly slashed, in part because of pressure from groups like the Marijuana Policy Project, but also because of studies that came out showing that seeing these ads actually made teenagers more likely to use marijuana, whether through correlative or simply because they didn't believe what they were seeing. So, you know, luckily that's been scaled back significantly. And, you know, even the DARE program is starting to, at least in some parts, be a little bit more scientific about their educational programs. You know, with the exception of a recent incident where a spoof, a satire website claiming that a bunch of people that had been at Coachella had died from eating marijuana edibles, you know, it was entirely a joke website. But the DE or the DARE program actually put it on their website as a news site and left it up there for quite some time.
Yeah, that is very deceptive and miscommunication. They want to poison the pool of the idea of considering all the health benefits of marijuana. As you probably realize here in Alabama, down in Montgomery right now, they're discussing this back and forth. And we got Carley's Law. Are you familiar with the Carley's Law we just got down here?
Yes, I am. And while it's definitely a symbolic victory, unfortunately, the bill is probably unworkable for a couple of reasons. The first being that it requires a prescription instead of a recommendation. And every single functioning medical marijuana program in the country only requires doctors to recommend it. You know, that's protected under free speech. But prescribing something that hasn't been approved by the FDA can actually cause a physician to lose their license. So, you know, we're not going to see any doctors that are going to be risking their licenses by prescribing any sort of marijuana products in Alabama. Secondly, it limits the program to only substances or products that contain only CBD or cannabidiol. While this substance has been shown to be helpful in a lot of seizure disorders and similar things, a lot of patients, even with those conditions, require there to be at least some THC and other components of marijuana in order to find relief. So even if patients were actually able to get their medicine, it would only help about 2% of patients that could be helped by a whole plant marijuana law.
Oh, wow, that's something serious. And they're also trying to didn't get it like it should be. You know, that, like you said, it's unworkable. But while that law is unworkable, they're also down there discussing about marijuana DUI. I mean, they're already thinking about how the government can grab some money out of this thing if it does go through. I mean, we're not even finished with the discussion of how far we're going to go with it, and they're already coming up and debating plans about how to collect money off of it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Alabama already has a DUI law. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Alabama already has an effective OMVI law, and what we found is that there's really no science backing up a per se DUID limit for marijuana. You know, a lot of states are trying to narrow it down to like 5 nanograms per milliliter of concentration in your bloodstream, but we just don't have any data showing that that actually constitutes impairment. Particularly if you're a medical marijuana patient, you could have that built up in your system over time, where even if you were completely sober and hadn't used your medicine in many, many hours, you would still be above that legal limit. So it's just one more way to unscientifically target marijuana users.
Yes, it sure is. And I think one of the main reasons is they're ignoring the science. I mean, National Geographic, they're doing stories about it. Time Magazine is. And we see all the benefits. Look at these states that's got at least $15 million toward their educational system, while ours here in Alabama is crumbling. It's crumbling. And what I really truly feel is Alabama doesn't want to give up anything that might hurt their prison industrial complex. They just don't want to give it up.
Well, it's unfortunate, too, because an effective and well-regulated marijuana industry could more than replace any sort of taxation that comes from the prison industry, and by creating businesses as opposed to locking people up.
It sure is. And I think about what happens when a person goes to prison for these things. They're going to permanently, unless they got a lot of money to get it expunged, I think now it costs around $5,000 and takes a period of almost 2 years. Because I worked with convicted felons trying to restore their voting rights back. But look at this. They're going to have that felony, so they're not going to be able to vote. So they're out of the country. You have no effective way to influence your government. Number two, there's very few jobs with somebody with a marijuana conviction. Number three, it's going to be very hard, almost impossible, to get housing. So you're arresting people for these petty, nonviolent crimes, and then when they get back out on the streets, they can't find a job, they can't vote and effectively try to change the system, and they can't have nowhere to live. So what do you think is going to happen? It won't be long before they get sent back, because they're going to do something. They got to eat. They're going to feel desperate. And I think this is just a way to make sure that the recidivism pipeline is pumping well.
Absolutely. And when you combine both the disenfranchisement from a criminal record with the emotional and psychological trauma of being incarcerated, it creates a recipe for disaster that feeds into continuing cycles of poverty and crime.
It sure does. And we're not attacking this thing from the right perspective, in my view. Let me say this first. I also was looking at, and I don't know if you know anything about this. I know you talked about the seizures, but I was also looking at cannabis as a way to treat ADHD. I've been studying that a little bit later. I just started looking at it about a week ago. I don't know that much about it, but there's a real problem with ADHD. And I was hearing that there have been some breakthroughs about that.
Well, I know a little bit about it. As far as I know, there's not really a whole lot of scientific data to support it, but there's lots of anecdotal evidence, and people are certainly looking into it as an alternative. I know that Alabama also has very high cancer rates, and medical marijuana has been found to be very helpful in not only treating both the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation, but also just dealing with the pain of the actual disease. And while there still needs to be a lot of research done on it, there have been studies that show that THC and other compounds within marijuana will actively attack cancer cells and tumors.
Yes, that's very good. Very good science behind that. Another thing I want to touch on, like I said, I talked about the ADHD. Here in North Alabama, I don't know how it is, but I think some of these drugs, these very dangerous drugs, they'll get real bad in one area and seem like they'll shift to another state or something. But here we're dealing with people, actually a lot of people too. A lot of people are dying in Alabama, especially North Alabama where I'm at. We just had two high school students a week ago on these synthetic drugs. And I was just wondering, how would a more managed cannabis industry would affect the synthetic?
Well, the only reason that these compounds were invented was so that they could get around the prohibition of marijuana. Every time somebody changes one little molecule of this, of like whatever is synthetic cannabinoid that they're spraying on whatever, potpourri or random plant material that is being sold as spice or K2 or whatever, it's just slightly a little different, but it hasn't been studied in human trials at all, so nobody really knows exactly what this stuff does. And then the DEA or state drug control agencies will outlaw one specific chemical, and then, well, the guys will get back in the lab and they'll make one that's a little bit different that's not outlawed. And it just goes on and on and on, and as this this cycle continues, these chemicals become more and more untested. And one of the big reasons that people even go to these synthetics is because they happen to be on probation or parole, and where a failed test for marijuana could send them back to prison for many years. So I think that
true,
if we're able to make marijuana legal and regulated for adults, you're going to see the popularity of these substances just drop through the floor.
I think they will too. And there's also the ex-military veterans that's suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome that are also using this, and they're saying that it helps them.
Yes, medical marijuana has been shown to help with PTSD in a large number of cases, and there's actually a study that's being started right now with a Dr. Sue Sisley, who is going to be specifically looking at trials among veterans to see exactly what mechanism it is that helps with treating PTSD. And, very recently we had a bill that was introduced in the House to make it so that VA doctors would be able to recommend marijuana if they were in a state where it was it happened to be legal, and it lost by only 3 votes. And many of the people that were voting no on it are the same people that have been voting yes on, foreign incursions and, voted yes for the Iraq War. And now they're denying veterans the ability to treat themselves through the VA system with the medicine that works best for them.
Yeah, and that's why I commend you for what you're doing, and I'm going to support it all I can by sharing the information and talking to people. But also, I know you know this, you're up against, and we're all up against, some very powerful forces. I mean, there's a lot of people who are going to be hurt, and they feel threatened by marijuana coming onto the scene as a right to grow as a crop, not only just for the medicine. Take it back to Ford with his first car. I mean, it makes some of the hardest plastics. Marijuana fibers is like 100 times tougher than steel. So there goes the insurance companies that's going to be hurt. There goes all the people that make little fenders and parts and bumpers. They're going to be hurt. Then you look at the pharmaceutical companies who are poisoning our youth and people of all ages. They're poisoning them with all these opiates and medicines. So they're going to be hurt. And then you got the pharmacists and all the doctors, too, with the radiation, who control the radiation stuff. So there's very powerful forces and big money that's trying to stop this thing at every turn. So, like I said, I commend you for what you're doing.
Well, I definitely appreciate it. But those groups you mentioned are actually relatively minor players in terms of opposition. We really don't see too much organized offensives from them. The people that we see stopping us or trying to stop us at every turn are law enforcement organizations and police unions. Most law enforcement agencies in this country get an incredible amount of money from both civil asset forfeiture and through federal grants programs that are based entirely on the amount of marijuana that they seize. So they're not able to, if marijuana were legal, they lose a major tool that will allow them to pay overtime and buy fancy toys and military-grade weaponry. And while individual police departments can't really fight against it, police unions and police chiefs associations can, and they can spend money to try to fight us in the public sphere, but while still wearing their uniforms and having sort of the authority of being under law enforcement, they are really the biggest opposition that we have to deal with, because we're taking money out of their budgets directly.
Yes, and big ups and shout-outs to Obama for yesterday to stop giving them military-grade weapons. Next thing you know, they'll be flying drones and have drones hovering over people's houses with their infrareds.
It's totally possible, and you know we've already started seeing drones being used for law enforcement in other states. But I mean, regardless of what happens with that bill, I think that we're still moving in a direction nationally, both towards making marijuana regulated for adults, similarly to alcohol, and allowing medical use, hopefully at the federal level or in an increasing number of states. But I think in general, we're starting to come to a point in popular discourse where people are realizing that, you know, the drug war is tied up with a lot of, civil rights issues that are, you know, coming to a head in this country and have been for quite some time. So, you know, we're starting to see a lot more pressure, and people are starting to see the connections between marijuana prohibition and the war on drugs with a lot of the oppression and inequality that have been happening in this country for decades.
Yeah, and we know how the government likes to make money off illegal drugs. I mean, you just don't have to look too far back to Iran-Contra. I mean, this so-called phony drug war is also funding a lot of bad and sometimes evil things in other parts of the world that we don't even see unless a scandal like Iran-Contra is revealed.
And, you know, even still, after some of those scandals have been revealed, the United States continues to enforce its own drug policies through treaties on the rest of the world, as well as putting the most of the harms associated with that on those people, on those countries' doorsteps. You know, the DEA operates in almost every country in the world right now, and basically forces those countries to bear the brunt of of our country's drug war. You know, the 100,000 plus people that have died since 2006 in the Mexican drug wars is a direct was directly caused by the illegality of the marijuana and other drug market in the United States. And so we're starting to already see with marijuana becoming legal in several states, at least with marijuana, the pipeline is starting to reverse. People are actually starting to smuggle high-quality marijuana from the United States into Mexico as opposed to vice versa, and it's already taking a toll on their infrastructure. Now, obviously, it's not going to completely shut down the cartels to make marijuana legal. They'll be able to recoup some of their losses elsewhere. But for every dollar that goes to a legitimate business as opposed to a criminal organization, that's one less dollar that gets to be spent on bribing officials or buying AK-47 rounds.
Yeah, the legalization here would really put a dent in the Mexican drug war, because there really wouldn't be that much of a need to have an all-out slaughter to be able to have those routes into the United States. I mean, it would be kind of useless for them to fight it out with each other to get a product here that's already here.
Yeah, at least in terms of marijuana. And like I said, it's not going to shut the cartels down, but it will certainly take a dent out of their war chests.
Yeah, what do you see in Alabama for the future of this? I mean, they're just now coming around to start to really talk about it and examine it. But like I said, I think there's a greater fear of losing bodies, really, to put into the prisons. So, but like you said, the momentum is swinging and people are changing. But do you see anything from your standpoint in Alabama, and could you tell my listeners and me also things that we can do to help you guys out?
Well, we're continuing to lobby state lawmakers in order to try to get a comprehensive medical marijuana bill that includes THC introduced. And we're going to be working with several people to try to get a bill introduced that would at least reduce or remove criminal penalties for low-level possession and replace them with a civil fine similar to a parking ticket or something like that, so that people don't have to deal with that criminal record just for possessing a substance that's safer than alcohol. Now, Alabama, as well as the rest of the region, is a little bit behind a lot of other places. And I think that's largely in part because of the prison industrial complex. But it's an interesting thing to notice that most people that are in jail for marijuana aren't in jail just for marijuana. But the fact that marijuana is illegal is usually what precipitates the arrest and then can be built into some other charge that does result in incarceration.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, Tennessee, you know, like I said, we are behind. We got to come up into the new world, as I say, coming out of the backwoods. But if I'm not mistaken, I think Tennessee just passed the bill. I think their bill is only dealing with the fibers, like I was talking about, you know, the fiber, all the different fibers and plastics. I think they're moving, if they have not moved all the way toward the fiber, I think they're talking about it enthusiastically, about having that.
I know they're definitely considering it, and Kentucky has a legal industrial hemp system set up right now. I just don't know exactly how much they're producing or how far along it is in the process. There was a really interesting event, though, I think that happened like a year or two ago when, in accordance with its state legal law, the Kentucky government was importing like 1 or 2 tons of hemp seeds in order to get this program started, and the DEA tried to stop the shipment. And then, interestingly enough, Mitch McConnell just went bonkers and started attacking the DEA for interfering with Kentucky business. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing for him to do based on some of his previous positions.
Yeah, that's true. And also Rand Paul. Rand Paul is also sort of progressive on this issue, too. And, you know, especially when he talks about, you know, the government ought to stay out of people's houses, what they do in their own homes. But the best law I think is out there, and you tell me what you think about it, is the one in Alaska. I mean, can't they grow like 2 or 3 plants? Is it something like that? You can have up to 1 ounce on your possession and have 5 plants at home. I know it's a number of plants, but I don't know exactly how much that is.
Well, MPP wrote the laws for both Colorado and Alaska. We were the primary financial supporters of both those campaigns. So the systems are actually pretty similar. Colorado is, I think, at this point, a much better system simply because they had a pre-existing medical marijuana system that was one of the best regulated in the country. And then they've had time to further regulate the adult recreational industry and learn from their own mistakes. And, you know, so now it's getting to the point where they've taken care of any sort of issues that have been popping up. But in both states, adults are allowed to possess up to 1 ounce of marijuana on their person, so somebody 21 and over. And you're allowed to grow 6 plants, 3 mature and 3 immature. In Alaska, I believe that the total cap on a household is going to be 12 plants. But those bills are very similar. Alaska hasn't yet been able to set up its the industry side of it yet. It hasn't been able to set up regulated businesses, but it's moving in that direction. Colorado, as we've seen from all the news coverage, is doing wonderfully. They're generating tens of millions of dollars for tax purposes, creating thousands of jobs, and we've actually seen teen use go down in a statistically insignificant manner, but still not all the doomsaying that our opponent said was going to happen as these bills were being implemented.
Also, I read, too, also, whenever people legalize the marijuana, and I think this was based off of a study in Colorado, the suicide rates go down.
That was actually based on several different states. And there was another interesting study showing that in states that had passed medical marijuana, that opioid overdoses from things like oxycodone or even heroin have been dropping precipitously.
That's great. And it might be Colorado, but I'm pretty sure it is. Isn't that the state where they were contemplating giving some money out to the citizens they had made so much? Did that the citizens was going to get a rebate, like a marijuana rebate.
Yeah, that's just a very strange Colorado law. It didn't really have anything to do specifically with marijuana, but rather once Colorado collects a certain amount of taxes from any sources and don't use them, they have to give a portion of them back to the citizens.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Because we're facing a budget situation here in Alabama, and our system is in bad shape. It's in very bad shape. They're contemplating gambling. They brought the marijuana up, but the people are, you know, they can't deny the science forever. That's why Carley's Law came through. They did, like you said, it's unworkable. They slid through whatever they could to maybe, like, quieten the people. But now is not the time to get quiet. We need to take this thing a step further.
You're absolutely right.
Really,
and the
works.
Best thing to do that is to contact your lawmakers. Make sure that they know that marijuana is safer than alcohol and that it is an effective medical treatment for a wide variety of diseases and conditions, and that their constituents support it. I think a lot of politicians are still afraid of being considered soft on crime by taking scientifically feasible and sensible drug policies, and they need to hear from the voters that that's not the case, that the only way they're going to hurt their careers is by trying to delay the implementation of these sensible bills any longer.
That's so very true. That is very true. So at this point, I want you to give any information where my listeners can, how they can help, how they can contact you. And I'm going to be sharing your Facebook page and doing it on other social media. But just give my viewers and listeners some information where they can contact you.
Go to mpp.org and you'll be able to find everything you need there. You'll be able to also find, if you go under our state pages, you'll be able to find very simple ways to reach out to your lawmakers directly. We've got email forms and phone scripts available. And like you said, we're on Facebook and Twitter, so you can reach us there.
Okay. We're during the 30-minute mark. I know you got a lot of things to do. You want to say anything else before we get off of this? And I appreciate you being on the front lines of this. And we're going to rally the troops, and we're going to try to bring some sensibility to these marijuana policies.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and you know, I hope that we can get something changed that's really going to help people in Alabama soon.
We're going to keep working on it, my friend. We're going to keep working on it. And you're always welcome to come back on this show at any time. Just let me know.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
marijuana legalization. Medical research. Ever since marijuana was legalized in Colorado in 2012, reinforced efforts have been made to further study the medical benefits of weed, making this state the hub of marijuana research. It's been officially considered safer than most prescribed pharmaceutical drugs. Prohibition diverts from important priorities. Meanwhile, as more than 50 government agencies put billions into enforcing authorities to prevent marijuana use of any kind, social public welfare and relief programs are stepped over and dismissed. Hemp products. The number of uses for the hemp plant, besides sprinkling it into a pipe, ranges from paper, plastics, clothing, nutritious seeds for flowers, cooking oils, and animal feed, along with a slew of other uses. Due to its growth without the use of herbicides, it can nourish soil efficiently and produce crops quickly. It's the number one biomass producer on a global scale. It can even be used for creating a form of fuel, reducing the need for fossil fuels, and reduce climate change. Wasting money on drug cartels. States already tight on cash are throwing away their finances on tracking down illegal drug cartels without even considering how they can prosper in the billions from simply taxing and regulating pot, just like alcohol. Getting back a basic human right, people are being jailed for choosing what they want to put inside their bodies. Instead of criminalizing alcohol, which can most certainly do harm to the body in high doses, and behind the wheel, a firm law is placed on a plant with countless proven benefits that happen to also be recreational. Harmful consumables that should be regulated. Meanwhile, addictions such as tobacco use, which cause an array of lethal illnesses, and overeating, which can cause a variety of diseases, are mildly moderated by governments around the world. Surprising health benefits. A 2006 study announced THC to prevent protein clumps that can inhibit cognition and memory. As research progressed, it was also found in 2012 that certain non-psychoactive cannabinoids resulted in dramatic reductions in cell viability, validating UK researchers to start using these marijuana compounds to treat leukemia patients. And since the onset of awareness of depression is not labeled as an official illness, it's now been verified that it can lower levels of depressive symptoms. Crime drop. Going back to Colorado, we can also mention that violent crimes like murder and robbery plummeted 6.9% in the first quarter of 2014. Property crime like larceny and auto theft fell 11%. This fended off all accusations that legalizing weed would have caused a rise in overall crime and drug use. Economy boost. In an open letter to the President, Congress, governors, and state legislatures, signed by over 500 economists, they agreed that marijuana legalization would save $7.7 billion per year in state and federal expenditures on prohibition enforcement. It could result in $6.2 billion in tax revenue if pot was taxed like alcohol or tobacco. Less incarceration. It's a known fact that hosting and providing for prisoners accused of marijuana possession is coming straight out of taxpayers' pockets. With the release of these inmates, taxpayer money would be spent on better priorities. Plus, there would be no more need to build more prisons.
legislation, unlike other countries.
All right.
Where marijuana is legal, such as money is in the air.
First time I've smoked a joint in a long time.
It's really smooth.
I no longer have to feel like a criminal.
Right.
I'm not doing anything wrong.
Kevin and Rachel are hot tourists. Oh, so happy to be a mile high.
Welcome to Colorado.
It's Colorado, okay? Once prospered a 18-year-old with silver and gold. This bonanza is different than the girl. Everyone is
teasing. That's a lot of marijuana.
This is a small portion. We're going through right now 500 pounds a month, and we can't keep up.
This feels like what I would imagine the industrial age slamming it into the dot-com era all at the same time.
If a state comes along and says it's illegal, what do you think the message is to minors?
Oh, no, it's terrible.
Lots of kids say, well, it's legal.
How bad can it be? I have great concern.
It's still another oxygen that's going to get out of control.
There are so many unknowns about this really powerful marijuana that it's just too early for me to say how much trouble it's going to cause.
We don't know yet. We jumped into this too quickly. Colorado is the first state to legalize pot. It won't be the last.
A lot of people are going to lose their shirts, and a lot of people are going to make a lot of money.
I'm Harry Smith. This is Marijuana in America, Colorado Hot Rush. Okay, so it's not a covered wagon. But behind the tinted windows are pioneers.
Yesterday I was a stay-at-home mom, and today I'm a stay-at-home mom who can legally smoke marijuana.
They've come to the new frontier of recreational pot.
Did anybody buy so far?
I feel buzzed.
Yeah, I've got a nice beginning of a light buzz. I'm sure another 10 minutes or so and it'll set in a little deeper.
Kevin Ward owns a small business. Rachel Eau Claire is a mother of two with a master's in counseling. He came from Pennsylvania.
Here we are.
They are strangers in paradise.
Okay, we are at Lodo Wellness.
Hot tourists who pay $500 apiece to indulge in the pleasures of a state-sanctioned high.
Come on, let's go in.
Their guide, Peter Johnson, owns Colorado Green Tours, one of hundreds of companies hoping to take advantage of the state's exploding legal marijuana market, projected to soon exceed $1 billion a year.
It's amazing the technology that they're putting into this stuff.
I think the industry is going to explode. I don't think it's going to take 2 years. We've been profitable since day one.
Tourism has long fueled Colorado's economy. Now its visitors have another reason to spend money here.
Fantastic.
As much as half of Colorado's retail pot is bought by out-of-staters.
Here's your first illegal marijuana.
I'm so exciting. My heart is racing. I'm feeling a little sweaty. I'm nervous, but I'm super excited. I feel like I'm almost looking over my shoulder, like, should I really be doing this right now? I am. Part of history.
Well, Jason, listen, you're much in there. You have a safe and happy life.
I will.
Everywhere we went, we found businesses cashing in on Colorado's green rush. Security firms protecting profits.
I think this is going to be an ideal location.
Brokers leasing warehouse space to growers.
It is ready for build-out.
At Denver's Incredibles Edible, they're cranking out 40,000 marijuana-infused candy bars a month. A kitchen unlike any we've seen before.
That's a lot of marijuana.
This is a small portion. We're going through right now 500 pounds a month.
And 500 a month?
And we can't keep up.
Yeah, Bob Ischino runs the company. Today, his team is cooking up strawberry cough crunch bars, strawberries, white chocolate, and 100 milligrams of pure hash oil in each and every bar.
Are you just tempted to kind of, you know, make sure
it's okay? More tempted to take the spoon and go in there and go like that. But then I won't be very reliable at work.
Where's the main ingredient? This is a hash oil. Just keeping it warm so we can mix better with chocolate.
Wow.
Pure, concentrated THC hash oil, fully activated now, ready to go into the bar.
I think you need to close that door.
Okay. I may be becoming affected by it.
The thing that is difficult for me to understand, I mean, not touching marijuana in decades, is the potency of this stuff.
You know, if you come in here and eat one of our bars and go hit the ski slopes, you're not getting off the chairlift. You're just getting to go around dinner.
The production of infused edibles and other non-smokable products has taken off, making up nearly 40% of all recreational pot sales. It's easy to see the appeal. No smoke, no stench, no cough, no bombs.
What I'm trying to figure out in my own mind is this innocent or insidious.
Do I think this is better than a beer?
Yeah.
Beer has zero healing properties.
That sounds like rationalization to me.
I personally don't have an issue whether you're doing it recreationally or whether you're doing it for medicinal reasons. Just like anything else in this world, as long as you handle it responsibly, the emphasis falls back on you, personal freedom.
As Fox goes legit,
welcome to the future Amsterdam of the West.
It's no surprise that investors are taking notice.
Welcome to the new legal cannabis industry.
We traveled to Las Vegas, where we found 140 venture capitalists looking to get in on the action. Troy Dayton is CEO of ArcView, an investor network focused on
innovation. If you want to be a pioneer, if you want to be part of the next great American industry, then I think this is a good place to play.
They're both key predictions. The U.S. legal pot market will be worth $10 billion by 2020.